the film with three brains. It's 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 the film with three brains.
Oh my God, you guys are freaks.
Now, being from Earth as you are and using as little of your brain as you do, your life has pretty much been devoted to dealing with fear.
It has?
Well, everybody on Earth deals with fear. That's what little brains do.
What are little brains?
That's what we call you folks behind your back. Forgive me.
Hello, and welcome to the film with three brains. This is Sean in Chicago.
And Cohen in Maplewood, New Jersey.
And for a limited time only, Sam in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. You going somewhere on us?
Well, I mean,
oh, you mean gotta, like limited time like this podcast?
Well, no, I mean, San Francisco's not going to last forever. Come on.
Wow. Well, before we talk about climate change, we should discuss a movie called Defending Your Life, starring Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep and some others. And it is a rom-com sort of, I mean, I didn't think of it as a rom-com, but it is.
Yeah. I didn't really think, I don't really think of it as that either, but you're right.
Yeah.
I guess it is.
But it's pretty, I don't think there's a whole lot to discuss with the plot. It's just that, by the time the credits roll, he has run his brand new BMW into a bus, and, the rest of the movie is in Judgment City, which is where people go to decide if they're moving on in the universe or going back to Earth to redo it. And that's the gist. He meets someone. I mean, before we prattle on about that, do you guys have any quick impressions about this, or had you seen it at all recently?
I had seen it, but not recently. We
I had never seen it.
If I recall correctly, we studied it in my screenwriting class in college.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
Yeah. But I hadn't seen it in many, many years. Probably not since then, actually. I remembered bits and pieces here and there, but, you know, nothing too specific. Just the broad strokes. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I really like it. I think the thing I love most about it that kind of tickles me is the idea that Earth is sort of, there is no heaven and hell. There's just Earth. You're like, Earth. You got to freaking go on Earth again. Like,
yeah.
This sort of innocuous purgatory, or you evolve and move on.
And
they sort of judge people by how many times they've gone through life on Earth.
Yeah. I like that bit.
Yeah.
Did you was it held up as an example of a screenplay, or what? How did you study it, do you think?
Yeah. It was a writing class, so yeah,
okay.
we just studying. I don't remember the specifics of it. It was like, I think it was this and Witness were two of the sort of films my professor Doug really liked that he liked to teach in his classes.
That's a double up for us anyway.
Yeah, sure is.
Sam, what'd you think?
So I'd never seen it before, and I've told you, there's just something about Albert Brooks I just don't really care for.
Sure.
And
yeah,
he didn't win me over this time.
When did you bring that up? And it was like a specific thing that you didn't
I can't
like.
Remember what we were, I thought.
It might have been when we were talking about Out of Sight, because he plays kind of a shitbag in Out of Sight.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Nailed it.
He really doesn't strike me as a much better person in this one. You know, like it,
know.
No, really. Like it's
no, I agree.
And so, yeah.
I think that's the biggest weakness of this film. I really enjoy it, and I think it's a lot. There's a lot about it I really like, and there's some. It's pretty tight in a lot of ways, but the one big one is why would she fall in love with him? He's kind of unlikable.
Yeah, I think
and that's a tough one to get over because it happens a lot in movies. You know.
But I think because his character is fine, but just not as a leading character. Yeah. I watch this movie and I'm like, okay, I get it. His comedy's understated. Like, he likes to be kind of the wry kind of, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to say depressive, but he's not the in-your-face comedian. It's like
self-deprecating,
yeah.
you know, and which, sad sack-ish.
Yes, which is all fine as comedy, but usually not as the leading comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, the to me, I was like, this film needs a shot of adrenaline. Like, I was like, if you redid this movie as Adam Sandler, which probably is way too far the other way, but if you use 1990s Adam Sandler, there's so much material. I mean, just think of Adam Sandler going back and looking through his life to judge, like, how many stupid things there'd be, you know? I mean, yeah. like there's room for real, like, gut-busting laughter in this that just yeah. never happens. I think it's well written. I think it's the premise is really, I think, clever. I don't think it's developed as much as I'd want. So it's like I think when you talk about it in a screenwriting class, I'm like, oh, is it, you know, what I would want to hear that lecture. I'd want to hear what your professor thought was the good and the bad of it.
I would imagine, I don't remember the specifics, but my teacher at the time, he was a very big proponent of learning the rules before you break them. So he always taught us in the class, in writing class, three-act structure. He didn't really focus on anything else but that. So he wanted us to make sure we had a strong foundation of sort of, you know, the basics before we, you know, flex our muscles. So I imagine, you know, for this, I think what really appealed to him was the ending, the way they raised the stakes for the ending, you know, like the plane's going to take off and they got to get to the airport before the woman gets on, that sort of shit. And then this one has one of the best examples of that, in my opinion, you know, where he runs after and he's on the side of the van, you know, and then it cuts to the courtroom or whatever you want to call that with the screen. And they say, is that brave enough? You know, like that's a pretty great, that style of ending. So I'm just, and again, I don't remember very well, as a while ago, but I think that it was that sort of thing. I think he was interested in the structure of the screenplay more than anything else.
Yeah, it certainly has that tidy finish, you know, seconds from end credits that I think is really effective in a lot of movies, a lot that we've talked about even. But I mean, Sam, you were saying, you know, Adam Sandler, like there's a lot of people that. A lot of stuff you could have done with this, with the premise. And I definitely think that too, but I also, I kind of appreciate the restraint they have in like not sort of mining it for everything it's worth and that restraint pays off in the end, because I think he is kind of a sad sack until he does the heroic thing at the very end. And it's almost out of character because he's
yeah.
grown during the movie.
Yeah.
So if he had been really curious and done all kinds of crazy stuff, or, you know, like followed every joke down the rabbit hole, it probably would have taken away from the narrative a little bit, at least if it was Adam Sandler doing it. I mean, sometimes I think, like, I don't know why this one comes to mind, but if, you know, 50 First Dates, when the premise is that Drew Barrymore has amnesia, or some kind of memory loss, and her brain resets every single day, and he tries to date her with this huge challenge. So like in that premise, you know, like you're going to, you know, have every nook and cranny of that you can think of, like what kind of joke's going to make with this premise. But with this one, really it's the city, like the Judgment City is the movie to me, you know,
yeah. So allow me to interject.
Yeah.
Okay.
If Judgment City is the movie, then the movie is called Defending Your Life. Mm-hmm. I think that's the problem I have, is that it's not enough of the actual scene what his life is. You know, having an extra 24 hours to think about it, is that the beginning of the movie didn't set up that he's someone who was flawed in some way that he wouldn't make it on. especially in a way that they're like, oh, he's living in fear, you know, that he doesn't do things that he wants to do. Because if anything, he just bought a brand new car. Like, that's an expensive car. That's usually the opposite of fear, is some people would say that's even a little reckless to do that. So, yeah. Then he goes to Judgment City. It's kind of a surprise to hear, like, oh, well, these are your failures. Whereas, like, Secret Life of Walter Mitty, you get the idea right away of, okay, this is this guy's flaw, and we're going to work on that for the movie. So I think that's the element of the save the cat structure that this is missing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think that the days that they look at, you know, you get, it's like, oh, 9 days, you know, everyone has a different number of days they're looking at. And when I was watching, I was trying to kind of keep track, but it's hard because I don't know if they count the rebuttals, you know, if one lawyer type, I guess, you know, defender or prosecutor brings up one day, then the other person gets a chance to rebut that. I mean, they didn't really, it wasn't like hard and fast rules, I think. I'm guessing it was like, you present 9 days like in discovery in a real trial or something. Like, you say, oh, I'm going to do these 9 days, and they say, okay, I'll do these, or whatever, you know, whatever the rules are. But like the montage, which is kind of what you're getting at, like, there could have been so much more examples, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And it was one quick montage of him, you know, falling over stuff. And yeah, so I don't know. Maybe that is the problem with it. And it definitely, the title, I mean, if it was called Judgment City, I don't think.
No, of course.
I don't know. Be weird.
No, I mean, Defending Life is good, but it just sets you up for a slightly different thing. I don't know. It's an enjoyable concept. But
yeah.
The movie's actually enjoyable too. I'm just, you know, I think part of the things is it's our nature to just like pick apart all the little flaws and.
Hell yeah.
Especially the nature of these three brains. like, we could equally try to make a podcast where we talk about all the great things in a movie.
Yeah.
But it would be effort, whereas this comes naturally.
Also, what fun is that?
Yeah, I mean, we could do some experiment, like, you know, I referee or somebody referees, and then two other people take sides and argue one side. But we'd lose our 10 listeners. Out of 10.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if it's the. Well, I mean, I definitely think that the beginning. It could have led to something more significant because, you know, like, why do we have to see him meet his car dealer and know that, you know, they're selling people, there's a funny smell and everyone's calling them, you know, like, I don't know what that part was supposed to, and except of course, you know, like a way to get him in the car, and then he has to drive the car into the bus.
Right.
So I guess that's all you need.
Yeah.
Did you recognize any of the albums any of the CDs he was holding?
Yeah. I think one was Edie Brickell, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was the Shooting Rubber Bands one. But it cracked me up because I totally forgot that they used to sell them in those big boxes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's crazy. You go to Tower Records and you pull this giant box out and pay $20 for a $10 CD.
Yep.
Oops, that's what killed him, I think. Maybe.
Yeah. That bothered me. The way he died bothered me because my wife and I, when we were watching it, we both said, not like at the same time, it was nothing so sitcom-y, but it was like, have you ever looked down at the floor of your car for more than a second or less? Have you ever ducked your head below the dash rooting around for some shit? No, I don't think any human has ever done that. Because would you survive long enough to get to the point where you do duck your head below? I can feel, Sean, are you going to tell me you've done that?
Yeah.
Come on. What, like drop something on the floor and then get down there and root around while you're driving trying to find it?
I think we might have lost Sam, but I'll keep going.
Dude, I'm back.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah.
Well, sometimes you close your eyes for a while just to see, like, just, if you drift off. Yeah. Like, you close your eyes and you're like, okay, how far off of the center lane did I, you know, did I drift? You
I
know?
Mean, that is a practical way to test the alignment of your car, I guess.
With your eyes right. closed, yes.
Yeah, with your eyes closed, of course. Yeah. So, Sean, elaborate.
My younger sister, Jennifer, could tell this with utter clarity because I was driving her on Highway 50, you know, heading to the interstate. And I had, I think it was a Subway cup. You know how the Subway used to have those cups, those reusable cups, and you mm-hmm. could get in free refill?
Sure. Free refill.
And I would scrounge that thing every chance I got. So I was always looking for that cup. And what the dumb thing is she was in the car with me. Like, I was like, oh, can you find that thing? And she was like looking, but she, you know, like she wasn't doing it fast enough or something. And so I reach over to try to grab the cup from under like her seat. And next thing I know, I caught the shoulder on the right side. And then I felt it and I tried to correct and I overcorrected and I came all the way back. Across this, it's a 4-lane highway, obviously.
You
across
those two lanes.
I cannot believe you did this.
Oh my, yeah.
You're neither proving me sister. Wrong. You're totally yeah. proving me wrong. I just yeah. assumed no one in the history of humanity and automobiles had ever done that.
Yep. I have a lot of those kind of anecdotes there. Darwin Award type things. I should be dead. Yeah. And unfortunately,
you keep
sister,
scraping by.
Wait, that's not the end of it. So then we went across the two lanes. And then we went into the ditch in between the
median
four
between
lanes,
the
you know, the big divot in the, yeah, you know, in the middle sure. of Highway 50.
Yeah.
And yeah, we bounced through that kind of violently and ended up in the oncoming, like side of the oncoming. Yeah. Not quite like in the oncoming lane, but like on the edge of the oncoming lane.
Wow.
And we were kind of flipping.
And I really wish your sister was a guest on this episode. Right
oh,
now.
I should have saved it for her. I've invited them to come on, both of my sisters, but I should have saved that just in case she does come on someday. I'm sure she has another one, but
yeah.
Anyway, yes, it is possible to be a dumbass and reach for something while you are driving.
Hmm. All right. I stand corrected.
But I also Brooks, do agree that it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of silly that he, you know, he's in LA, which is normally full of traffic, and somehow he's lackadaisically driving around.
Yeah.
And hits a bus. Hits a bus going about 30, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You know, but whatever. Yeah.
Right. Right. How fast could they have been going?
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. I don't recall. All
right. Right.
Is that the only time you've ever tucked your head below the dash and almost killed yourself?
I also had a boombox in the backseat one time, but I never had any incidents with those.
No.
I definitely have reached while driving and yeah, I'd say. Don't do that, kids. Don't be dumb while you're driving. Don't text and drive either. Yeah, it's a good thing that we didn't have cell phones when we were that age.
Oh, yeah, you would be dead.
Oh, you'd have never made it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well then.
So anyway, did you know that those trams in the movie are from Universal Studios?
I did not.
Like they're older models or something.
Hmm.
I don't think I've not been to the one in California.
I think that's the only one I have been to. Yeah, we went there. Not that long ago, a few years ago. It was fine. All right.
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to go to talk about the trams because I like that those little moments, you know, like with the little old lady that pets him like her poodle and mm-hmm. have you got a minute? And you know, those little transitional bits are I think what saved the movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of little moments like that, like when he's on tram and he just sort of looks around and he realizes he's the youngest person on it.
Yeah.
That sort of little things like that I like.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's like, "Well, we have plenty of golf courses. Is anyone golf? Oh, you won't be able to raise your hand right now, but yeah. Right. Yeah. I like that they don't explain the universe either.
Yeah.
That would be fatal, I think.
Yeah, I like the sort of the universe they create, you know, that Albert Brooks creates in this film. You know, it's fairly simple. It's pretty straightforward. You know, it's not terrible. It's not too cynical. Not mm-hmm. really. And it's not expected. You know, it's not a heaven and hell kind of scenario, which is I really appreciate.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clever, you know, the way it all plays out.
And still the goals are clear. You know, you want to move on. You want to win your case.
Yeah. I think Rip Torn is probably my favorite thing about this movie. Still don't get the big brain bit, do you?
He was perfect.
Yeah, he's so funny. He basically is playing the same character he plays in Men in Black. We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger down here.
Yeah. He's a double up, right? For
What else was he in?
Was he
in like
why am I blanking on the name of it? Amy's pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh geez.
I don't know that Beastmaster. I actually heard an
Beastmaster.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I don't think he was the first choice though, right? Somebody else was supposed to be
I think he wanted Dennis Hopper, he wanted Jack Nicholson.
I can't picture anybody else but Rip Torn.
I can picture Dennis Hopper, not Jack Nicholson though.
Yeah, he's a little too out there. But would you believe Dennis Hopper as a, you know, 51% brain?
Yeah, no, probably not. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Sure.
He's better off in Waterworld.
That's all I can think of Dennis Hopper as, given our recent review.
How about it. Speed?
Of course I know him of other things, but the only image.
Not Easy Rider, no.
No.
Not Blue Velvet. Speed.
Yeah, The Drunk Dad in Hoosiers.
Oh, yeah. That's a good movie. I'll pick that someday.
Nice.
So are you guys familiar with Albert Brooks? I'm sure you are as an actor, but also as a writer and director.
I guess.
Like, have you seen any of his other movies? I guess is what I'm asking.
I like Lost in America.
That's a good one. I like that. Have you guys seen Real Life, which was the first film he wrote and directed?
No, I read about it.
It's interesting. It's I don't know if I call it good. It's interesting. It's definitely way ahead of its time. He plays a filmmaker who decides to follow a family around for a year, inspired by the PBS American Family thing.
Oh.
But he can't help but try and manipulate stuff to make a better show. So it was made in 1979, so it's pretty prescient in that regard. Other than that, though, I mean, Modern Romance is pretty good. I don't know if he wrote that or he just directed. Maybe whatever. That's all right. Lost America is pretty good. I like Defending Your Life, but I don't care for Mother and the Muse much at all. And I didn't see the Muslim World one.
Oh, I saw the Muslim World. That's actually not bad.
Yeah,
I appreciated that because he's not playing. I mean, he's sort of playing himself. He's playing a comedian that goes to the Middle East and gets in some sticky situations and. Is, you know, he's about as funny as Albert Brooks would be as a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Maybe a little, I mean, no, that's fair. But it's like fine. It's a nice combination of those silly situations, you know, along with, you know, a reasonable plot, I guess, of him. I can't even remember why he goes there. If it's his agent does it to him, but. It was all right. I mean, I watched Mother just now, and yeah, it was a weird transition from going Defending Your Life to Mother.
Yeah.
It's like he took everything that worked in Defending Your Life and sort of stretched it all out into something that didn't really work that well.
Yeah. I saw Mother when it came out. I don't remember anything about it other than I didn't like it.
I remember trying to watch it back in the day, and it was yeah, like the style and the humor and the things that they're trying to get at are pretty adult.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, when I saw Defending Your Life at that time, I didn't really need to, you know, understand aging or, you know, those kind of things, that those adult question type questions to appreciate the movie. Cause you know,
yeah,
I think it's because it's a better movie. It does the work for you.
Yeah. I think, you know, he's made a couple of good movies, as we just said, as a writer director. As an actor, I think the best thing he's ever done is probably Broadcast News, which mm-hmm. is a James L. Brooks movie. And, you know, he's got some good ones. I liked him in Drive. Did you guys see Drive?
Yeah. He was good in that.
Yeah.
A little bit different than his usual self.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he was pretty good in that.
Was he a gangster or something?
Yeah, kind of. He was like a criminal kingpin type.
Yeah.
Surprisingly convincing. I was surprised. It's like, oh. Also, did you guys know he worked on Saturday Night Live the first season?
No.
He made short films, sort of like Lazy Sunday, you know, the digital shorts, Dick in a Box. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the first season, he made little short films they would show as sort of interstitials between sketches and shit. I don't know if he was ever in front of the camera. I can't remember. But, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I appreciate about Defending Your Life, is that he was able to direct, write, act, and do them all passably well.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've talked about that before, that it's not that easy. It can't be that easy.
No, I'm sure it's not.
It's too much to think about. I mean, how do you keep your head in the scene while you're acting when you're trying to really think about it as the director?
Yeah,
that's what I don't understand about those things.
Minor bit of trivia: Albert Brooks was born Albert Einstein.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm pretty sure I think his brother was David, Super Dave Osborne.
Yes, I think that's true. Yes.
And he passed away not that long ago, I think, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I think he did. I mean, he was on Curb Your Enthusiasm a whole bunch.
Yeah. Yeah. He was great on that.
Yeah. No, the crazy trivia, I don't know if you read this one, but the nightclub scene, the comedy club where.
Yeah.
The guy's he's terrible. And
the thing about his dad?
Yeah.
Yeah. You should tell our listeners.
Yes. So, dear listeners, the scene in the comedy club is why am I blowing this? why can't I remember the damn line? What does he say to Albert Brooks?
Shit.
Oh, he's like, how did you die? And he's like,
right,
on stage like you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Butchered that. But yeah, the not so funny part is that as a reference to his dad, Harry Parks, or Harry Einstein, I guess, who died at the Friars Club doing a roast like they still do. And he died on stage during his routine, maybe just after it. So I guess that was a reference to him because
it was like an inside joke for Albert Brooks. I mean, I guess
a joke,
you know, a joke.
Hey, I'm going to make fun of the way dad died. Great.
Well, they say humor is tragedy plus time, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then he says they're about to go and he's like, I can't. That's my father. And then she's like, what? Yeah. He said, no, I'm kidding. Let's go.
Yeah.
Humor is tragedy plus time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comedy is tragedy plus time.
I would argue that you don't really need the time. It can be like right after. You'd be like, that looks like it really hurt.
Are you guys Are you guys familiar with Anthony Jeselnik, the comedian?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he would agree with that 100%.
Yes.
He has whole extended bits about how he was kicked off the air.
Yeah.
Oh, he responds to tragedies immediately because it would be weird if he didn't.
Yes.
He got kicked off the air for a certain joke, or what was that?
Yeah. Well, he has a couple. He has a bit called Thoughts and Feelings, or Thoughts and Prayers, I mean. You know, where he kind of rips people who immediately have to tweet or post my thoughts and prayers with, you know, out to whoever mm-hmm. it is around the world. And he has another bit where he talks about sharks, because he had a TV show in which he had this shark human scorecard. And there was actually a shark attack and someone died in like Australia. And he's like, well, today sharks won, humans zero. And the people at the TV station thought that was not appropriate. And that's how he lost his show.
Yeah.
Wow. He stuck up for himself, but it's a good bit. I mean,
yeah,
I like listening to him. Every one of his bits is a good bit to me. Yeah. I'm in. It's totally wrong, but I'm all in on him.
He's really funny.
Yeah. I mean, that's the trick, though. I think even if it's a horrible bit, if you're doing a Holocaust joke or something just way beyond the pale, I mean, it's definitely has to be funny first, you know, or mm-hmm. what's the point? Right. And secondly, I think you have to know the comic and try to kind of trust their worldview.
Yeah.
To some extent, if you've never seen it before and they come on stage and you just don't find them funny, I guess that's just the way it goes. But
yeah.
Who's the.
Well, I've already proven in Life is Beautiful review that I think that there is no boundary for humor. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing in Defending Your Life that really stretches the boundaries of good taste.
This is actually very tame. And what's really interesting about a movie that has an afterlife is that there is not a single denominational joke.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there that about any religion, which is pretty impressive that seems like a harder feat to not do that than to actually do it.
They had to have been intentional.
Oh, it was. He wanted something that would be kind of applicable around the world.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I think
must have been hard to resist some of those jokes, though.
Yeah, a few low-hanging fruit death jokes or. Well, not death joke. I mean, I can't even. Yeah, I can't even think of any.
The low-hanging fruit death jokes. Yes.
Right. But yeah, the little brain stuff was pretty funny. And you know, I think, Cohen, you already mentioned that it's pretty hilarious that the whole idea is all of existence is just it's a throwaway type of practice or trial or, you know, it's not the real deal. It's just
right. It's like a dry run for the, the actual.
The one thing that didn't pay off very well was. Rip Torn says right in the beginning, he's like, in a few hours, you'll be smarter than anyone you've ever met. Sound exciting?
Oh, he does?
Yeah, it's right when he meets him.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And then
that didn't pay off.
I wonder if they cut something that referred to.
Yeah.
Because, how do you go from 3% to, something more? Just because you're there? I guess that's what. Or was it because you're smarter because you now understand more about the universe?
That's probably it.
That works.
Yeah, because then don't they say they specifically say that when you go back, no one ever remembers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was pretty funny. Shirley MacLaine was the hologram host of the Past Lives Pavilion.
That gets me every time. She shows up. In a hologram, and that woman goes, "Oh my God!" And younger people probably don't understand that, but back in the day, Shirley MacLaine was on TV. I think even infomercials and stuff like for not past, well, yeah, past lives and mm-hmm. clairvoyance and stuff like that. After having a long career, you know, then she did that and people kind of mocked her a bit for that, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah.
This was the first movie that she'd done in a long time, I think, that I had read.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Well, wasn't she... I mean, what was
it? Terms of Endearment?
What? Yeah.
That's mid-80s or something? I don't even know.
Yeah.
Early?
Yeah, and Albert Brooks had like a voiceover role in Terms of Endearment. He played Shirley MacLaine's husband in the opening scene off camera.
Yeah.
No, I guess... she didn't have that big a gap, I guess. I'm wrong. I take it back.
Because wasn't Postcards correct. From the Edge around then, too?
Yeah, it was a year before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that. Was that... That's similar, right?
I don't think I've ever... Oh, Postcards from the Edge is about Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher.
Oh, it's actually about them?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I've never seen it. Always meant to. I just never did.
You're watching it next, maybe.
Wait, you have seen
maybe
it?
Maybe not,
it?
Though.
No?
No, it's a good movie.
Okay, all right. But it's rare that all three brains have missed a big movie like that.
Yep.
I have seen it.
All right, good.
Great. I mean, I like Mike Nichols, the director. I mean, he's made some really great films.
Oh, yeah.
That one, I don't know what happened. Just never...
I didn't really know that Buck Henry, who's in Defending Your Life, wrote a big portion of Mike Nichols, like The Graduate, and what else did he? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he kind of pops up, and somebody else was supposed to play that part of the lawyer that shows up when Rip Torn is caught near the inner circle of a fault.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny the way he's like, you wouldn't understand. Oh, you wouldn't understand. And he's like, try me. He's like, I was trapped near the inner circle of fault. He's like, I don't understand. It's like the same bit over. It's yeah, I like it.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
And obviously, I mean, there is an obsession with food, I think, probably with Albert Brooks, but...
Yeah.
It is. It's definitely a fantasy. I have I definitely had dreams, buffet dreams. Not as much lately, but when I was a kid, I used to have a lot of like, it'd be a big breakfast buffet and I'd be piling plates up and I'd sit down and then I'd wake up and I'd be like, oh, come on. But something about that translates to this movie. It's just the idea that you can, I mean, they could have gone more along the lines of sin and sex and stuff, you know, like it doesn't matter what you do that way either.
Right. It doesn't matter how much booze you drink. You can, you know, smoke crack, cigarettes, whatever. It doesn't matter because it's not a physical realm, you know, you don't really have a body.
I mean, I don't think that would have necessarily improved it, but it was interesting. No. But I mean, sex was a factor, but it was in a different way.
Yeah,
I kind of like that. You know, of course we don't care about spoilers. We do whatever we want. But at the end, there's, you know, him wanting to be with Meryl Streep. We haven't talked about her yet, but she's, you know, this is a smooth sailing for her. I would say. I don't think that she has to really stretch to do this character.
Yeah.
But she's great. Anyway, he wants to sleep with her, and then she says she wants to sleep with him. He's like, "Would you want to come upstairs?" But he's like, "No, I don't want to." And then that becomes a big thing in the trial,
right?
But I like that she says, "I love you," and he doesn't say, "I love you" back until the end.
Yeah,
it's not really made, you know, it's not an issue, but it's like it's definitely if you're listening for it, you're like, "Whoa, that's weird." She said it like twice, and he hasn't even said it yet.
So
that could be the fear part. But also that it was separate from the sex part. Like, he didn't think of it as, you know, I don't know. I guess, you know, you can give a movie credit for doing things like that. But then you, at the end of the day, you could just, how do you evaluate what you like and what you don't like about what their characters are doing? It's who the hell knows? I don't know. I'm going to shut up now. Somebody help me out.
No.
It's more fun to watch you squirt.
Yeah. Well, it is an interest, like the whole, you know, going back to the 9 days thing and trying to judge who a person is out of such tiny little snippets. Like, mm-hmm. you realize, like, okay, if this were real, if everything you ever did in your life was somehow on film and you could go back and, like, they could cut that thing to make you be anybody.
Sure.
Like,
good point.
You know, it's true. You could, you know, pick your unhappiest moments or your crazy driving moments and be like, this guy was reckless. You know?
Right. I didn't fault him at all for his shitty driving or anything.
Right.
So, or yours.
Or mine, thank goodness.
Yes. Well, we don't know yet, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that could be the one thing that's important, yes, in the afterlife.
Or at the end of this simulation, we'll find out. Well, actually, you have to go back because you failed the driver's ed part.
Oh, yes.
Twice. Sorry.
No problem. I'm just going to leave it there. Yeah, I don't... what was it about the... I like the, you know, how the waiter, he's embarrassed about everything. They didn't really go into that, if that's just personality or if that's fear. But, like, you know, he's like, I'm going to bring you 9 pies, one for each day. And then he's like, no, don't do that. And then he shows up and he's like, yeah, you asked me to bring me these pies. And then the lawyer's right there looking at him and he's embarrassed. And it's, you know, it's funny. That's the important part. But it wasn't like, you know, part of his fear, I guess. I don't know. Or the public speaking thing. I mean, why would it be important to overcome a fear of public speaking?
Maybe because it's so common, and most people probably never do overcome it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Stab in the dark.
I mean, I don't know if that was Sam, one of your jokes, or somebody, some comedian was like, fear of public speaking is number one.
Seinfeld.
That's Seinfeld. No, and no. Number two is death.
Yeah, Seinfeld's joke. Yes. I love that joke. Yeah. It's like number two is death. So that means if there's a funeral, you'd rather be the person in the box than the person giving the eulogy. That's genius.
Yep.
Well,
should we do a little housekeeping?
Sure.
Sure.
I think you could watch this movie pretty young age, but I don't know that you'd be interested, but it's totally tame.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But I have a hard time imagining, like, an 18-year-old would be like, yeah, I want to watch this.
Uh-oh. I got another example. Because yeah, that's right when it came out, was I think it was on HBO or something like that, and I've definitely watched it more than once because I enjoyed it as a teenager.
Yeah, but you didn't say you wanted to watch it. It was probably, you're sitting on your couch,
no. Yeah,
and you flipped it up and you're like, oh, I'll watch this.
It's too lazy to find.
There's
something
a
else.
Difference. Yeah, my eyes were open and aiming in that direction, and it came on. Yeah. Like, that's not the same as like, okay, I'm gonna seek this thing out.
Fair enough. Got me there. Okay. So maybe, yeah, when you're old enough to appreciate or think about what might happen after you die.
Yeah.
But it's pretty family friendly. It'd be hard to make you wouldn't make a sequel, but it'd be hard to make a remake too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was there a single swear word in this movie?
Like hell or damn, maybe.
Yeah, I don't remember anything that really stuck out.
Rip Torn's like, tastes a bit like horse shit, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's right. Oh, right. I love that scene. That was awesome. You wouldn't like it.
You're curious, aren't you? I like that about you.
It is one of the best scenes.
Yeah.
It's good. Right. So I think we covered the ending. I don't know. Is that all the housekeeping? I could talk about this for another half hour, but I know we don't want to.
No, talk away. I gotta go mow my lawn. I'll be back.
Yeah, no, I'm more curious what we're doing next.
Yeah, what's next?
Well, that's kind of interesting that you asked, because
you've got mail.
Oh.
Yeah, got that little thing there. Because we got a piece of mail that says, "Hi, Film with Three Brains. What do you guys have against 1978? Not a single review so far. You all know some of us were born that year. Bryce in Galveston." So
wait. Say that. Say Galveston?
Yeah.
Bryce in Galveston?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know Bryce?
No, I just want, you know, like people like to hear their name, I imagine.
I know Bryce, but I don't know where he lives.
Okay. Well, I kind of thought it was weird that he had to point out that some people were born that year. Because I'm not aware of any years where there were no people born.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I don't think when we set out to do reviews that we actually were choosing years based on whether or not people were born during such year.
Is that the only year we've missed?
So
I would be shocked if that's the only year we've missed.
Are you getting to that?
I went back and looked, and we've missed 2 years.
What?
So my next two picks are those 2 years. So this one's 1978. But seeing how I was at an age where I wasn't really seeing many movies in the theater in 1978, I decided to look at what were the highest grossing films in 1978. And the first three we have all seen multiple times: Superman, Grease, and Animal House. And the last four in that group I have also seen, and imagine we've all seen: Jaws 2, Up in Smoke, Revenge of the Pink Panther, one of Vivian's favorites, and The Deer Hunter.
Yep.
But 4, 5, and 6, I had not seen any of the three. It was Every Which Way But Loose, Heaven Can Wait, and Hooper.
Hooper with Burt Reynolds?
Yes.
Hooper, okay.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen these?
I've not seen Heaven Can Wait.
I've seen them all.
We didn't discuss that ties into Defending Your Life, but we can skip that, whatever.
Well, I'm skipping Heaven Can Wait because I was like, I'm not going for two Heaven movies in a row.
Yeah.
You know?
Makes sense.
That's just too much.
Screw that.
Yeah. It's like too much Heaven. It Can Wait.
Oh,
boy. Yes. So I chose Hooper because I was like, okay, we've done the, we haven't done anything, I think, that's Hooper. We've done Clint Eastwood already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was like, all right. And the other thing is we all have a tie to Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
We saw him at South by Southwest. So
not long before he passed away.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
So, yeah, Hooper, 1978.
Cool. Yep. Well, thank you, Bryce, for the for pointing out the oversight. It was a magical year. Yeah. All the best people were born in 1978.
Yeah.
You got to keep your listeners happy. You know, you can't shit all over them.
You can. They have no choice. Most of our listeners, they have to hear us because they're sitting in prison, and this is just piped over the intercom.
That'd be awesome.
Somebody's going to get out in 5 years and shiv one of us.
They're just they sitting can't in stand isolation the sound of listening to this.
Do we know where Hooper may be available for our listeners?
Oh, crap. I forgot that other needy person wanted to know that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I'm looking it up right now. Hold on.
Yeah. Hooper. Defending Your Life was on HBO. For those people.
Backwards. Hooper is not streaming nor available to rent or purchase.
What? A pow. I don't believe that at all.
Yeah. We'll have to do some digging.
Yeah.
I'm sure Hooper's around somewhere.
That is a shame to pick a movie that's not easily findable.
Damn it.
Yeah, it's kind of our thing now, isn't it?
All right. Do I have to change my pick? You're right. I don't see it anywhere.
Well,
no way.
We should be able to find it somewhere.
We'll find it.
All right.
It'll turn up.
But, yeah, our listeners are on their own. Sorry. Figure it out.
Well, we can't spoon feed you everything.
I know. I'm not here to hold hands. Come on.
Yes.
No. I told you not to.
Now, if anyone knows where you can watch Hooper, let us know. All right.
Yes. That's that really put the finishing touch on a fine performance here.
One of our finest. It took 2 days to perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
Indeed. All right. Well,
yeah. This has been the Film with Three Brains.
Yeah. See y'all later.
That's the Film with Three Brains. I got chili dogs over there.